The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Thanks, Lachlan. You get a moment or two. This is the only time I'll ever say this. You're not supposed to look at the Bible on the other side because all the answers are there in Matthew chapter 2. But see if you can answer those 8 simple questions about Christmas. Welcome, gentlemen. Grab a seat. We're just going through. There's a quiz inside your handout there. I think what we might do is we'll go through the answers, see how you went. All right, here we go. How many magi or wise men came to see Jesus? 3, 2, 6, we're not told. Anyone?
One.
Was that mate?
Bethlehem.
3. And Stephen? That's not right, actually. D, we're not told. Can you believe it? We're not told. It could be 3, but we're not told how many. What about number 2? Why do we say 3 wise men? Well, the answer is D. They probably because they gave him 3 presents. But there could have been 4, and like 2 of them went in for the gold because that would be more expensive. So we just don't know. Now, question 3. How long have they been travelling? Now, this is a tricky one. And the answer is 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, actually up to 2 years. They'd come a long way on the camels. So that picture there of the wise men turning up and baby Jesus still being in the manger, that's not accurate. Jesus would have been a toddler by the time that the wise men turned up. We'll see that in Matthew chapter 2. Okay. 4. How old was Jesus when the wise men found him? 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months? Up to 2 years old he could have been. Probably between 1 and 2 years old. Question 5. Who was king at the time of Jesus' birth? Good King Wenceslas, Alexander the Great, Herod the Great, Herod the very average, Nebuchadnezzar? The answer is Herod the Great. And we'll find out more about him in a moment. Where did Jesus spend the first 3 to 10 years of his life and why? Answer, Nazareth, Bethlehem, Jerusalem. The answer is Egypt. Why? Because King Herod was trying to kill him. It was a place where Jesus and his mum and dad could just go and blend in. Okay. And then we're just doing the quiz. Todd, question 7. Rachel's tomb is a legendary site in mythology, lost in antiquity, actually in Israel today. I haven't been there to that particular place myself, but it's easy to go and have a look on Google. It's all guarded security, but it's still there. And then, at the news of the Messiah's birth, what did the wise men do? What did Herod do? What did the general population do? All those questions are answered in Matthew chapter 2, and particularly I want to come back to question 8. What did the wise men or the magi do? What did King Herod do? What did the general population do? Let's see if we can answer it. On the flip side to your quiz is Matthew chapter 2. Let's have a look. There's two different versions or two different explanations about the birth of Jesus in the New Testament, Matthew's Gospel and Luke's Gospel. If you read them carefully, Matthew's Gospel is told from Joseph, Mary's husband, from Joseph's point of view, and Luke's Gospel is told from Mary's point of view. And so they give you different details. The basic story is the same, but they're told from different perspectives. So let's have a look at Matthew chapter 2, and particularly through Joseph's eyes. Here we go. Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea, during the time of King Herod, magi from the east came to Jerusalem. They asked, "Where is the one who's been born King of the Jews? We saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." Now you notice the word wise men isn't there. The word Matthew actually uses is magi. It means, it's from the Persian, Chaldean, Babylonian period, and it meant astrologers, those who read dreams. I guess wise men is kind of a good translation. Traditionally, 3. And there's a tradition that's quite early, way back to Tertullian in 225 AD, that they were 3 kings who came. But the New Testament doesn't tell us that, so we don't really know for sure. Now, why have they come? Well, there's a prophecy in the Old Testament that talks about a great king being born in Israel and that his birth would be marked by a star being seen. So in Numbers, book of the Old Testament, says this, I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob. A scepter will rise out of Israel. Now, that particular prophecy was well enough known that the Roman historian Tacitus and the Roman historian Suetonius both mentioned that. So it was known across the ancient world. And these magi, probably from around Persia, that area, have seen a star and come to find the one who's been born to be king in Israel. Now, is there any indication, what's the star all about? Could that have actually happened? Well, they turn up, they've seen a star. Here's something interesting that I've found. Paul Barnett, who lectured in ancient history at Macquarie University, and by the way, this is an excellent book. If you want to check out the historicity of the New Testament, is the New Testament history? If you Google it, you'll find it. It's still available here in Sydney. Paul Barnett says this. He found an ancient document that talked about explaining the star and what it might have been. Now, as I look around, for some of you guys your age, the ancient document is 1976 Time magazine. Okay, so that's pretty ancient. I found it. Here's the article out of 1976 Time magazine. I haven't got time to read the whole article, but I'll read you a little bit of it. Time, by the way, Time magazine is certainly not a Christian publication. This article is called Science and the Holy Light. So they talk about, is there anything in astronomy that points to what could have been the star for the Magi? They talk about the fact that, well, in terms of historical records, it wouldn't have been a comet or an exploding star or whatever. But here's what the article says. But there is one kind of celestial display that could account for Matthew's reference to the star of Bethlehem. Studies of early calendars and historical records of events immediately preceding and following the Nativity suggest to many scholars that Jesus was probably born sometime during the fall of 7 BC. I'll say more about that in a moment. That year, the heavens offered a display that few who studied the stars would have failed to notice. Three times in 7 BC, there was a conjunction of the same two planets. Conjunctions, or what seem to be close approaches of the planets in the sky, are common occurrences. They take place at periodical intervals as the planets orbit the sun at differing angular velocities. In May of 7 BC, Jupiter, which astrologers of the period considered both a royal star and a lucky one, first moved close in the sky to Saturn, which is believed to influence the destiny of the Jews. Even more significant, this conjunction occurred in the constellation of Pisces, where celestial events traditionally foretold incidents of great importance to Israel. In September of that year, Jupiter again closed in on Saturn. So you put Jupiter and Saturn together, and to the naked eye, it looks like a new star. Some astronomers and biblical scholars speculate that the first conjunction may have been the signal that started the Magi on their long trek to Israel, the second, the beacon that guided them on their journey, and their reasoning seems to accommodate the timetable of the Christmas story, for in December, the two planets came together for a third time, as if on cue to show the final way to Bethlehem. So who knows? There's a conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn, and they understood that, and so they came to find the king. Now here's something to think about. If you come to find someone who's been born the king of the Jews, where do you go when you turn up in Jerusalem? Well, you don't go to a shed or a cave or a manger, do you? You go to the palace. Makes sense. And so you see, verse 2, they turn up, they ask King Herod, where's the one who's been born king of the Jews? Now, see verse 3. When King Herod heard this, he was disturbed and all Jerusalem with him. I bet he was. I bet they were. Herod the Great really was not a great man. He ruled for 33 years, from 37 BC to 4 BC. He was a prodigious builder, built all sorts of massive buildings and forts, etc. A very powerful king. Okay, now, there's a problem, though. Sorry, I should say. Herod was only half Jewish, His father Antipater had helped the Romans conquer Israel in about 63 BC, and somehow Antipater managed to get his son Herod, who became known as Herod the Great, to rule as a kind of a Roman puppet king. You notice Herod died in 4 BC, and Jesus is born while Herod is still alive. Now that's kind of a problem, isn't it, if Jesus was born in 0 BC or 0 AD. So what's the problem? Well, Paul Barnett explains what happened. He says this in is the New Testament history. Since Herod died in 4 BC, Jesus must have been born in 7 or 6 BC to satisfy the detail of the search for the boys 2 years old. We'll come to that in a moment. Why is our Anno Domini calendar incorrect? It's because the 6th century monk Dionysius, when reforming the Roman calendar along Christian lines to pivot around the birth of Jesus, miscalculated the date of the death of Herod relative to the founding of Rome, the previous starting point for Western calendars. So he was close, he just missed it by a few years. Jesus born 6 or 7 BC. Now Herod was a nasty piece of work. Here's a couple of quotes from Paul Barnett as he quotes Josephus and other ancient historians. By the time his reign came to an end, and his reign was ending around the time Jesus is born, Herod was a depressed old man of 70, plagued with illness and the incessant disputes within his large family. He had 10 wives and 19 children. I think, what could possibly go wrong with that as a family? Anyway, Herod's suspicion bordered on paranoia. He killed his own wife, and at a later date, her adult sons, Alexander and Aristobulus. They were just some of the people he had executed. Augustus, the Roman emperor, made a grim joke that it was, quote, safer to be Herod's pig than Herod's son. So as a good Jewish man, Herod would never kill and eat his pig, but dangerous thing to be his son. Josephus commented that Herod had, quote, an evil nature, relentless in punishment and unsparing in action against the objects of his hatred. He was a nasty piece of work. We're told, Josephus says, at the end of Herod's life, when he knew he was going to die, he gave instruction that leading citizens of Judea should be rounded up and kept in prison. And then he said this, the moment I expire, have them, this is the leading citizens, massacred. So shall all Judea and every household weep for me, whether they will or no. Now, after Herod died, they let the people out. They didn't kill them, but that's the kind of man that he was. So when we hear later about what he orders about the baby boys, fits perfectly with the character that we know. Okay, verse 4. Herod, they turn up, they ask, where's the one that's been born king of the Jews? Herod thinks, oh, I have a problem here. So when he called together all the people's chief priests and the teachers of the law, he asked them where the Messiah was to be born. Now Messiah, the great king promised in the Old Testament. Hebrew word is Messiah. The Greek way of saying that is the Christ. The English way would be the anointed one, the chosen one, the special one. They answer, verse 5, in Bethlehem in Judea, they reply, for this is what the prophet has written. And then they quote the prophet Micah. But you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for out of you will come a ruler who will shepherd my people, Israel. Why Bethlehem? It's not a random little town. It's because Bethlehem was the hometown of the greatest king of Israel, King David. And the promise in the Old Testament is in the same town, in that same place, the great capital M Messiah, the great king or saviour, would be born. It's about, I think, 9 or 10 kilometres, maybe 2 hours walk from Jerusalem. So verse 7. Then Herod called the Magi secretly and found out from them the exact time the star had appeared. Now, he doesn't mean did it appear at like 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. He's saying, how many months ago did this star appear? Like, when did you start travelling? He sent them, verse 8, to Bethlehem and said, go and search carefully for the child. As soon as you find him, report to me so that I too may go and worship him. Well, we'll see why he wants to know in a moment. Verse 9, after they had heard the king, they went on their way, and the star they had seen when it rose went ahead of them until it stopped over the place where the child was. I think it just took them in the direction of Bethlehem. It wouldn't take long to find where the mother and baby, etc. was. And when they saw the star, they were overjoyed. Verse 11, on coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. Notice it doesn't say the child in the manger. He was a toddler by now. Okay. Then they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Well, gold, we understand. Frankincense is a glittering, smelling gum from the bark of trees and all sorts of medicinal purposes. Very, very precious. And then myrrh is a spice or perfume from Arabia. And having been warned in a dream not to go back to Herod, they returned to their country by another route. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So the wise men come almost as a kind of a delegation. They're probably sent for kind of on a goodwill gesture to this new great king of Israel. The dream is saying to Joseph, take the mother and the baby and get to Egypt as quick as you can because Herod will kill him. Egypt was an excellent place to hide. Josephus tells us that maybe up to 1 million Jewish people lived in Egypt at this time. And so Joseph and Mary could just travel down into Egypt and just blend into the population. In fact, in 2006, Kathy and I went to Egypt, 3 weeks holiday, and the tour guide took us and showed us the little flat that Mary and Jesus lived in when they were in Egypt. And I said, uh-huh, that's good. And just happened to be near a souvenir store as well. We don't know where they stayed. There's no, but anyway, the tourists love it. Verse 14. So Joseph, he got up, took the child and his mother during the night and left for Egypt. So where they stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, out of Egypt I called my son. It's a quote from Hosea in the Old Testament, the idea of God calling his son out of Egypt. You can ask, if you like, the question about that later on, we can talk more. When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious and gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. So probably 2 years is the top, but, you know, he's just being systematic, I guess. So he orders the murder of all boys 2 years and under. The scholars tell me it was probably, forgive the expression, probably just 20 boys, something like that. Bethlehem's a smallish village, and it fits Herod's character exactly. Do you see how different the Christmas story really is to the kind of Disney version? You know, you got Santa Claus and the elves and snow and the baby in the manger doesn't cry and it's all sweetness and light. This is a tyrant, and this is an attempted assassination, and this is a young family that are refugees and have to flee to Egypt and blend in and hide, etc. The world hasn't changed much, has it? Tyrants in the kind of around the Middle East and refugees and it's the real world. And verse 17, after the boys are, well, it's often talked about as the murder of the innocents or the slaughter of the innocents. Verse 17, then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah about 600 BC was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more. A lot of Old Testament all packed into that. About 1,700 years before Jesus' birth, Jacob, or also known as Israel, who's one of the patriarchs of the nation, his wife Rachel dies in childbirth, giving birth to her second son, Benjamin. And she dies near Bethlehem. And Jacob builds a tomb for her, and today you can still visit Rachel's tomb in or around Bethlehem. This quote is, and she becomes known in some ways as the mother of Israel, I guess. This particular quote's from Jeremiah. 600 BC, the Babylonians came and conquered Jerusalem. They assembled the people at Ramah, not far from this place, and exported them and killed many of them. And Jeremiah talks about Rachel weeping for her children then, and Matthew says Rachel weeps for her children again as they're murdered by Herod. Okay, just let me finish quickly. After Herod died, verse 19, this is in your hand or on the screen. After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel. for those who are trying to take the child's life are dead. So he got up and took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that, that's Joseph, when Joseph heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in the place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. And so was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, that he would be called a Nazarene. Now, how do we make sense of that? After King Herod died, anyone remember the time he died in? 4 BC, okay, 4 BC. His kingdom was divided. His daughter got a city somewhere. I can't remember exactly where that was. But his sons got the kingdom divided into three. Herod Philip ruled in the north, on the, this part here in the gold on the map. Herod Antipas ruled what's in green, Galilee and Perea. Herod Antipas was the one who later arrested John the Baptist and had his head cut off. He was a nasty piece of work as well. And then Archelaus, Herod the Great's son, ruled Judea, this area. Archelaus, typical of the family, was stupid and cruel and incompetent and ended up with riots and all sorts of stuff. And that's one thing the Romans could not put up with. And they kicked him out in 6 AD. So we know that Jesus came back from Egypt when he was no more than 12 years old, probably quite a bit less than that. That's the top of the ceiling. They kicked Archelaus out and they put in an administrator or a governor, the Romans. Now, I cannot remember who's the... It's in history, I just can't remember the name of who the administrator was in 6 AD. But I bet if you think, you know who the Roman administrator of this area was in 33 AD. Yeah? Pontius Pilate. Why? Because he was the one who put Jesus on trial. And his normal head office was here at Caesarea. And then at Passover time, he'd come down to Jerusalem to keep an eye on things. And that's why Pilate was in Jerusalem at the time Jesus was put on trial. Okay, the other one about, let me go back. He'll be called a Nazarene. Nazareth was kind of Nowheresville. Growing up in Nazareth, like growing up in, okay, I grew up in South Grafton. So anyone like, you kind of, people from Grafton would, you know. Growing up in Nazareth, you would be mocked about where you came from. And what it's saying is, as Jesus grew up, the fact that he was a Nazarene was kind of a put down. I think that's what it's saying. All right, why go to all this trouble about showing so many different historical touch points? The point's this, it really happened. And what we have, the New Testament's anchored in history, and the baby grew up, the baby taught us about God in ways that no one ever has, the baby said that we desperately need forgiveness. As he grew into a man, he said that he would give his life so that we could be forgiven, which he did. He died on a cross. As he rose again, as he promised. And he promises that those who trust him can have the promise of eternal life and can know God. We've got to let the baby grow up at Christmas time. But what I said we'd come back to is, what do people do when they heard about Jesus' birth? Well, the wise men or the magi, what did they do? They got on their camels and rode hundreds, maybe thousands of kilometres to meet or to see or to welcome the one who'd been born King of the Jews. And Matthew shows us the nations coming to Jesus. Not just the Jewish people, but the nations coming to Jesus. King Herod, or did King Herod really believe the prophecy? Hard to know. But he certainly believed other people would believe it. And he was worried enough about his power, etc., to have all those little boys murdered. And it fits with his character. So he took it seriously enough to do something about it. The real question, or the real surprising thing, is this: what did the general population do? And the answer is, well, nothing really. There's no record that anyone from Jerusalem walked 10 k's out to Bethlehem to check it out. And the answer is why? Well, they were busy. Right? They were busy. Now, why were they busy? Easy. It's Christmas time. We're always busy at Christmas time, aren't we? Let me show you one of the painting that I like. This is a painting by Pierre, forgive the pronunciation please, Pierre Bruegel in 1566. He was a Flemish painter and he's called this a typical medieval scene. You've got People queued up outside a baker's shop, a guy here unloading a wagon, a few chooks, that sort of thing, kids playing snowball fights, etc. But the painting's called The Numbering at Bethlehem. The Numbering at Bethlehem. Well, what's that all about? If you can look closely, and probably it's the resolution isn't good enough, but if you look closely at this couple here, he walks in front of her on the donkey. Now, look at this for the marvels of technology. Okay, you like that? I did that myself. How good is that? Okay, here we go. Ready? Zoom. He is carrying a saw above his shoulder. He's a carpenter, and he's carrying a block of wood as well, and she's all wrapped up in a blanket, but she looks like she could be pregnant. And his point is this, that people were too busy to notice. They were worrying about bread or snowballs or work or whatever, and the Christmas thing happened, and nobody noticed. Nobody had time. Now, you know, I've often thought that it's a pity that Jesus was born at Christmas time. Don't you think? We're all so busy at Christmas. We just don't have time to think. There's presents to be bought and all sorts of things. Like you look at Martin Place at Christmas time. It's just, it's alive. It's chaos. What would have been much more convenient is if Jesus could have been born in the middle of winter. Now there's Martin Place at Christmas time. There's Martin Place in July. Right? What's the difference? Well, in July, you could stay home and you could read and you could think and you could read a gospel. So here's my suggestion to you. Jesus has arranged a number of public holidays coming up. Okay, so if you're a follower of Jesus, why not read a gospel again and see the wonderful things that Jesus does as he grows, as he promises what he promises us. And if you're not yet a follower of Jesus, it'd be great to read a gospel to let the baby grow up and to see what it is that he says that's so life-changing as he promises us eternal life if we'll trust him. Do you know, that's the interesting thing, that there's no, even Don Carson, if you've heard of Don Carson, cannot find a particular statement of that in the Old Testament. So that's why we think it's more like the idea that he'll be kind of despised or put down because he's from Nazareth. It'd be like coming from, if you were up in the North Coast, if you came from Chicabia, people kind of went, Chicabia, right? And sorry if you ever do. That's, I'll be recording this. But it's that sort of idea, I think. And you get, in the Gospels, Jesus is put down for having come from the north, from Galilee. Yep. I think that's right. I was just reading that the Time magazine, I can't vouch for everything in the magazine, it's just that conjunction of the planets was very interesting. What the Old Testament says generally is don't play around with astrology. The whole idea of astrology, the occult, mediums, it's not the Old Testament says there's nothing in it, saying, look, it can be real in some way, but stay away from it, it won't be good for you. But on this, Matthew's quiet. He's not condemning them at all. I think it is the idea that they did the best with the information they had and they turned up. It'd be great to know more about them. The difference is Matthew wants to show us the birth of the king, and so the wise men get a mention. Luke wants to show us that Jesus is the friend of the poor, the downcast, the marginalised. So Luke tells us about the shepherds. They're probably a year apart when they arrive, but you know the shepherds were the bogans of the first century. So that's the difference. We just don't know much more about the Magi. Yep. Gavin,
that's following on from the previous question about. I read from time to time where people said that there's a coincidence of Jesus' birth and also midwinter pagan festivals which occur at the same time.
Yes.
The thing was that people adopt Christmas because of the pagan festivals.
Now, the origin of December 25 as the date of Christmas, I had thought until this week when I read that there were the festivals of Saturnalia and some other things that were kind of the death and the rising of the sun, or the winter solstice, when days begin to get longer again. And what the Christians had done was to choose that as the time to celebrate Jesus' birth. Now, the book that I've read this week, and I cannot remember who wrote it, it's called Christmas in the Crosshairs. He's disputing that, saying that wasn't really mentioned until maybe the 12th century, something like that. I hadn't come across this before. What he suggests is, in the ancient world, there was a belief that great men or great leaders were born and died on the same day, on the same day of the year. And so there was a belief, or that the church began to adopt, that Jesus had been conceived and died on the same day, in late March or early April. And if you work back, that puts his birthday at the end of December. Now, I don't know. There's just a whole different angle on it. But the more common one is, as you say, that there'd been celebrations about rebirth of the year at the end of December, and that the Christians decided they'd celebrate Jesus' birth then. I just think there's some debate about that. We don't know the exact date of Jesus' birth.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.